We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
From WILL, Illinois Public Media, this is Focus. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn. The producers for the program are Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal. Our technical director is Jason Croft. On the second Wednesday of the month, we turn our attention to nutrition. This morning, we'll talk about recipes for health. That's the name of our guest's daily online column for the New York Times. The objective of the column is to provide readers with exciting, nutritious dishes that are fun to cook and a pleasure to eat. Our guest is Martha Rose Schulman. In addition to her column for The Times, she's the acclaimed author of more than 25 cookbooks, including Mediterranean Harvest, Vegetarian Recipes from the World's Healthiest Cuisine, which came out in paperback earlier this summer. At the end of this month, the collection of favorites from her column will be in bookstores. The title, The Very Best of Recipes for Health, 250 recipes from the popular feature on NYT.com. Listeners, I look forward to hearing from you this morning. You can join us with a telephone call or by email. The phone number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Our toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Let me tell you a bit more about Martha Rose Schulman. On top of the column and her cookbooks, she's helped a number of others write cookbooks. They include Wolfgang Puck, Dr. Dean Ornish, and pastry chef Sherry Yard. She and cookbook author and food historian Clifford Wright have a cooking school, Venice Cooking School, in Venice, California. Both parents, they describe themselves emphatically as home cooks. 333-9455, 800-222-9455, and the email address will-talk@illinois.edu. Martha Rose Schulman, what a pleasure to talk with you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And you?
I am well as well.
Good.
So how
good to be here.
How did the online Recipes for Health column come about?
Well, I had a call a few years ago from the online health editor who had previously done some work at Health Magazine, where I used to be a one of the regular contributors. And he was just toying with the idea of including healthy recipes in the section. And so he wanted to have my thoughts, and I had a lot of thoughts about it. And I just decided to shape this column that would, my idea is that the easiest way to have a healthy diet is to cook, is to do your own cooking. And what people need to be empowered to cook is recipes that are easy and that taste good.
Yeah. Are there guidelines for what constitutes a recipe for health?
You know, not strict. I am always emphasizing to people that I'm a cook, not a nutritionist, and that I believe that if you have a varied diet and you eat a lot of fresh produce and you, I don't even think you have to be vegetarian, but you really should keep meat to a occasional thing that you eat, you're going to, if the focus is on produce, grains, vegetables, beans, that's just a tremendously good start. Of course, I try to keep the fats low, but not non-existent. I am somebody who, I believe that salt is important for seasoning food unless you have a medical condition that dictates that you can't eat it. But I sort of, my feeling about salt is sort of the same as my feeling about sugar. If you don't have diabetes or prediabetes, then there's no reason why you can't have a little sugar. And I feel like salt is really important for seasoning food. So I can't say there are strict guidelines, but intuitively I know that it's healthy.
Yeah. You obviously love to travel and learn about the foods of the places you visit. How has that inspired you as a cook?
Well, it's true, and I lived in France for 12 years and always traveled south to the Mediterranean when I did travel. I am all about finding the big flavor, and that is just something that you can travel in search of and find in so many places.
And in the book Mediterranean Harvest, what I find interesting about it is, as you might expect, it covers foods of France, Spain, Italy, and Greece, but there are also recipes from the Balkans, Turkey, North Africa, and the Middle East.
That's true. The Mediterranean is a basin,
mm-hmm.
so it's surrounded by countries. So you have the European Mediterranean. That's one part. Then you have the Eastern Mediterranean, Greece, Turkey, and the Balkans. And then you have the Southern Mediterranean, which stretches from the Middle East right through North Africa. And so your possibility, and every, so in a way, Mediterranean cuisine is a misnomer. It's really the cuisines of the Mediterranean.
Mm-hmm. I made one of the recipes from Mediterranean Harvest on Monday. And its place of origin, Egypt.
Uh-huh.
It's a lentil salad.
Oh, I love that salad.
It is so good. I served it at room temperature on lettuce with cherry tomatoes on the side.
That's great.
It was so good. I'm so happy I have leftovers.
Yeah, yeah. That's another thing that's great about Mediterranean food and all the food that I make. They tend to, their flavors tend to even get better the next day. They keep well. They're not. It's not fussy cooking that has to be kind of plated up and served right away. It's food you can make ahead and then have it for a couple of days.
Yeah. And these were ingredients that I had at home in the
yes.
pantry.
Well, I'm a big believer in building a pantry. That's one of the backbones of the cuisine that I present, especially in Recipes for Health. It's the idea that you can build a pantry, and then it's easy to cook well with a few ingredients that you have on hand. And with the column, at least the first year, every other week I focused on a pantry item, and every other week I focused on an item of produce.
Yeah, that I like the pantry columns because if I give that a quick look, I can go to the pantry and I can make dinner.
Yes.
From what I've got on hand.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what's so great. You can really build up a pantry, and then you never have to worry about what's for dinner.
Yeah. And the lentil salad, I'm just going to kind of run through the ingredients so give people who are listening kind of an idea of what this is. It's olive oil, and it's garlic, and then it's some spices, cumin, coriander, cardamom, fenugreek, which I didn't have, so I didn't put that in there. Lentils, salt and pepper, cilantro, if you like that, and lemon juice.
And the thing that's really nice about that salad is you don't overcook. The lentils don't get mushy. You're very careful about not overcooking them.
Yeah. It was delightful.
Well, I'm glad you liked it.
Your column this week has featured cucumbers, and maybe we could talk about that because they are in abundance now.
Yes. And I was inspired to write that column because I got an email from a reader saying, my garden has a bumper crop. Can you please give me some recipes?
Yeah, and they're wonderful, too, especially, I don't know how it's been in California, but it's been wickedly hot and humid.
No, we've actually had a cool summer here.
Oh, lucky you. So anyway, tell us about some of the dishes that you featured in the column this week with cucumbers.
Well, one thing that I did that may be new to some people is I featured a few recipes where you actually cook the cucumbers. And this is something that I had never even considered or thought about until I was in France and somebody served me a side dish of cooked cucumbers. And they soften when you cook them. You don't cook them for that long. But they still have a lot of texture to them and moisture. So I have one for cooked curried cucumbers, and then I have another recipe where I make a layer of cucumbers in a baking dish, put fish fillets like halibut, Pacific halibut on top, season everything with dill and then put in and garlic, and then put another layer of cucumbers on that. Pour a little bit of lemon juice and white wine into the baking dish and bake the fish with the cucumbers in it. And so you're really baking your side dish and your sauce and your fish all together, because you get a lot of really nice juice when it comes out of the oven.
Yeah.
And then another dish that I have, this is a memory I have that is so many years old. It's from the very first time I went to Europe when I was 15, and I was served just a very simple cucumber vinaigrette. But the cucumbers were sliced really, really thin, and it made such an impression on me. I just never had cucumbers like that. I can still taste that dish. And when I made the dish and tested it for the column, it was I went right back to that moment.
Yeah, that's lovely. And in Mediterranean Harvest, I was struck by your memory that you carry with you to this day of eating a peach in France.
Oh, yes. That was, I go right back there now. In fact, I have a column up. I also write for an online food magazine called ZesterDaily.com. And I just wrote a piece that went up today on picnicking in Paris. But I mentioned that peach as well, which I had in the south of France on a canal. And I just had never had a peach that big or that good.
Yeah. Well, we have had some terrific peaches this summer from southern Illinois that have come to our farmers markets here in Champaign-Urbana. And boy, it is so wonderful. It makes the heat and humidity almost bearable.
Almost bearable. Well, I think, you know, you're inspiring me. I think I might have to write a peach column.
Oh, excellent. Because there's not too much longer, I think. Well, maybe there are. Maybe through the end of August we'll have peaches.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's take a call. Our guest this morning here in the first hour of Focus, Martha Rose Schulman. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free 800-222-9455. You can also join us by email will-talk@illinois.edu. Our first caller this morning joins us from Downs, Illinois, line 4. Hi.
Hi. It is such a pleasure to be talking to Martha Rose Schulman. I cannot tell you. I started with your books with Mediterranean Light.
Oh, that's so nice.
And everyone that I have purchased, I have gotten those four recipes out of that I make over and over and over and over again, and that's my idea of a great cookbook.
Thank you. Well, that is, you know, I always say to people, you know, you always have your favorites from each book that you buy, and it's great that you do.
Yeah, and it's I don't have a question for you. It's just so pleasant to hear your voice, and I recently discovered the your column, and I'm just really enjoying that also.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear it.
But go out and buy a California peach, because we have had good peaches here, but they do not compare.
Yeah, they're pretty great out here.
Get an old variety and just let the juice run down your chin.
I shall.
Thank you. Thank you for your book.
Thanks for
Thank
the call
you.
This morning. What a nice compliment.
That's nice. That made my day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, at the Urbana Free Library, the library owns many of your books, and they are well loved.
Oh, that's great.
They are well used.
I hope they have splattered pages.
They do. They do.
That's a sign of a well-loved cookbook.
And also I'm going to mention that Mediterranean Harvest was donated to the library in honor of an organic farm in the area. And I thought that was a very nice...
That's so nice.
That's a very nice thing, too. Well, how did you begin writing about food?
Oh, gosh. I began as a cook, and it was just something I loved to do. I had no idea that would be what I was going to do, but way back when we had sort of vegetarian food in the 70s that wasn't very good, I became a vegetarian, and I loved cooking, and so I cooked all the time, and I learned how to bake bread, and I learned to make all the different grains, but then I was always converting recipes that I considered really good to vegetarian dishes, and one day I just decided this is what I love to do, and I'm going to do it. And so I decided I would teach, and I started teaching vegetarian cooking classes, and I had a catering service, and I had a supper club, which were paying dinners in my home. But I was also a writer in search of a subject. So after a couple of years, I sat down and wrote my very first cookbook, which was The Vegetarian Feast. And it took me 2 years to sell it, but during that time, I really honed my skills as a writer as well and started doing more magazine work and whatnot.
Yeah.
And the rest is history.
What have you found to be the key to a successful cookbook?
That the recipes work, I think, is the short answer to that question. It's really important that recipes be tested and that they work. And then I think that a cookbook should have, they should have a voice, and the food should have a voice too. You should be able to identify the recipes with that writer.
Well, that's interesting. I also think that the format that you've chosen for the books that I'm familiar with works very well. Advanced preparation, how long you can store something.
Yeah, I'm all about making it as easy as can be, and that's just information that people can use. I remember when I started cooking, when I learned to cook from cookbooks, and that's another thing. People can learn to cook from cookbooks just by cooking recipes they like. And that's another reason why they have to be clear. And I learned to cook from Julia Child to a great extent. And she always told me when I could stop, you know, when I could put something aside.
What was the kitchen like in the home where you grew up?
It was, my mother was a great cook. She made things, well, she was my stepmother. My mother had died, and my father married somebody who brought things into our kitchen like ratatouille and different kinds of lettuce and arugula. We ate very well. We really ate very well. And so I had a good palate because I'd eaten well. And I had a food memory. We traveled, not a lot, but when we did travel, if I ate something good that I liked, I always remembered it. So, and dinners were fun. We had a lot of fun around the table.
What were the family favorites?
We were big, in fact, we were big meat eaters. So when I became a vegetarian, now I eat a little bit of meat, but when I was just a vegetarian, I always said that I'd had my quota of meat at that point. We loved, you know, big, thick steaks and roast beef and things like that, like everybody else. But also, I loved the vegetable dishes that Mary made, the ratatouilles. And my job was always to make salads, and she taught me how to make a vinaigrette. And in fact, my very first recipe for a vinaigrette in The Vegetarian Feast is called Mary's Basic Vinaigrette. And what else? Every once in a while, you know, she'd make things like sole almondine, where she'd bread the sole and dip them in slivered almonds and cook it, and that was something I loved.
How did she learn to cook?
I think she taught herself, too. People just did.
Mm. Yeah. I think it's interesting what you say about you can learn to cook from cookbooks. I think that's very true.
Yeah.
And I think you after a while, you see how things go together.
That's right. You learn to cook by cooking. I am a totally self-trained cook.
Did you ever give any thought to becoming a professional chef?
You know, I didn't. I mean, I've thought about that notion, but I don't cook that way. I don't like cooking on a line. I don't like that kind of fast-paced cooking. I've spent a lot of time in restaurants because I do the ghostwriting as well. And it's really fun. It's really, really fun to watch chefs and see how they work. And I learn a lot from them. But I like to kind of linger over my cooking. I don't like to rush. I never was very attracted to the whole, you know, kind of schedule aspect of it either.
Yeah. It's very hard work.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is Focus. Our guest this morning, Martha Rose Schulman. She is the acclaimed author of more than 25 cookbooks, including Mediterranean Harvest Vegetarian Recipes from the World's Healthiest Cuisine. That book just came out in paperback earlier this summer. At the end of this month, a collection of favorites from her column will be in bookstores. She writes a daily online column for the New York Times. The title of this book that's coming, The Very Best of Recipes for Health, 250 recipes from the popular feature on NYT.com. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this morning with questions, comments, stories from your kitchen, your garden, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. You may also join us by email. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. Tell us a little bit about the work you've done with chefs to help them bring their recipes to home cooks. I mentioned in my introduction earlier, you've worked with Wolfgang Puck, Dr. Dean Ornish. He's not a chef. He's a doctor who's concerned about our hearts, and the pastry chef, Sherry Yard.
Yes, and also the L.A.-based chef, Mark Peel. I love doing ghostwriting because it's such a great, because I love to write, and it's such a, it's kind of like being a ventriloquist. You become that person. But culinarily, I love it because I get to learn things and cook things that I never would have learned. Specifically with Sherry Yard, I really was very weak on pastry when I started working with her. But I really knew how to write cookbooks, so it was a kind of perfect match because I could take her recipes and say to her, you know, this isn't clear enough. Because when I work with chefs, I test all of their recipes in my home kitchen. You can imagine how much my son loved it when I was working on the pastry book. So I sit with them, and I cook with them, and then I take their recipes home and test them in my own kitchen. And then I get to become their voice. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Speaking of your son, Liam, it seems from the time he was a boy, he was quite an adventurous eater.
He is. He is one kid who has always eaten vegetables, and that is great. And when we travel, he's always curious. He's never been a picky eater. I mean, there's things that he doesn't like, and, you know, of course, he's a kid, so he likes junk just as much as any other kid. And so, you know, I've got to be kind of vigilant about that because it's all over the place. And, yeah, he's really fun to eat with.
Why do you suppose he is that way?
Because I've always been so enthusiastic. I mean, it's luck of the draw. Some kids are just wired to be picky eaters. But I can remember when he was, you know, really little in a high chair, and I would, you know, say, oh, this ratatouille is so good. Here, try it, you know, and he would, and he would like it. I think if you make food that tastes good and you're enthusiastic about it, your chances are a little better, I think. But again, I'm not going to, you know, some people, they eat really well and their kids still will only eat,
yeah,
you know, pasta with,
yeah,
cheese.
There is hope for those kids, though.
They grow out of,
yeah,
it.
Yeah. My husband was a picky eater. His sister was, too. I don't know how their parents managed.
Yeah.
But anyway, they're much more adventurous today.
Yeah, I do think kids do grow out,
yeah,
of it.
And my husband now, he does the bulk of cooking at our house. How about that? So what are your thoughts today on the attention that we're now paying to what we're feeding our children?
Well, I think it's very important. I think that we are so up against the unhealthy food that's all around us and being put in front of us all the time. You just can't go anywhere that there's not a vending machine, that there's not a concession that's selling sugar and other things that aren't good for you. And so I think it's just part of a movement to take control, because if we don't, Well, you can see what's happening with obesity and diabetes in this country. We are in big trouble.
Here in central Illinois, we've seen a good deal of interest over the last couple of years in community gardens and engaging children in gardening. Is this a nationwide trend, and is it here to stay, do you think?
I think it is, and it's a really, really hopeful trend, because I think that you can get kids really interested in fresh food if they have their hand in the dirt. It's really important for kids to see where food comes from, and the more we can have of that, the better. It's really exciting to see.
Yeah. Also here, one of our farmers' markets, Market at the Square, every month they feature special activities for children called Sprouts at the Market.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah, yeah.
We had a thing at my son's elementary school called Fruit on Friday. It should have been called Fruit and Vegetables on Friday. But every week I would go to a farmer's market and get a lot of one thing. And then at recess, we'd divvy it up and everybody would get some of that thing. And so a lot of kids were introduced to vegetables and fruits that they'd never had before. And then they'd go home and they'd tell their parents.
Yeah. Actually, there's the county extension is doing that in schools, which I think is really also exciting.
Yes.
And then the children go home and say, guess what we did today at school? We had blueberries and yogurt, and then we put some raspberries on top.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we really have to start with it's a good place to start.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned now a couple of times ratatouille.
Yeah, I don't know why that keeps
coming. And that's a wonderful dish for this time of year as well.
That's probably why I have it on my mind, because it is. This is the time of year when you go to the farmer's market, you see lots of eggplant, summer squash, peppers, tomatoes, and that's what the basis is for ratatouille. It's a vegetable stew, basically, and you just quickly sauté all these different vegetables in a little olive oil, although I always roast the eggplant in the oven first because it'll drink up so much olive oil if you don't do it that way. And then you let it stew, these vegetables all stew together with lots of onion and garlic, and it's just one of these great dishes that has great depth of flavor and gets better every day that it lingers in the refrigerator.
How long does it keep?
About 4 days.
That's great. Can you take us a little bit step by step through that?
Sure. Well, here's what I do, and I do this with eggplant in many of the dishes. I preheat my oven hot, about 450. I cut the eggplant in half and score it with the tip of a knife just down the middle, not through the skin, but just to the skin. And I oil a baking sheet and put the eggplant on it, cut side down. Pop it in the oven for about 20 minutes until it begins to wrinkle and collapse a little bit. And that just gets it started cooking. Because otherwise, you would use so much olive oil to cook it. It will drink as much olive oil as you give it. I take the eggplant out and let it cool, and then I cut it up. And meanwhile, I've sliced onions and garlic and diced zucchini and red and green peppers. And I sauté all of those vegetables in batches in olive oil. You know, a tablespoon or so. Maybe you use 3 tablespoons in the whole dish. Then I transfer all of those kind of softened vegetables into a big casserole, heavy casserole. Add some tomatoes and some peeled, seeded tomatoes that have been cut up, and let it simmer with a bay leaf, some thyme, oregano, or basil. For about 45 minutes, very slowly. You can also let it simmer in the oven. And then just stir it every once in a while. Everything cooks down to a wonderful stew. And then if you can do it a day before, it's really better the next day. Something that the flavors just kind of amalgamate. Mm.
So maybe it's something to do on the weekend, and then you've got a couple of dinners ready
to go. Absolutely, and you can take leftovers. Like if you only have, say, a couple of cups left over, you could beat together some eggs and milk and a little Gruyere cheese and stir in the ratatouille and make a gratin and bake that in the oven, which is great, or you could fill omelets with it.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah, ratatouille omelets are wonderful.
Yeah. Can you freeze it?
Oh, absolutely.
And how long will it last in the freezer?
A couple months.
Great. That's something to do.
Yeah.
This month, next month, and
I've got a lot of recipe tests in my freezer.
Pull it out in November.
Yes, and then summer comes back to you.
Oh.
Rush.
And what kind of herbs do you like to include in your ratatouille?
I like thyme, oregano, and basil, and bay leaf.
Very good. Speaking of cooking things ahead, that's something else you've been writing about recently in your online column,
mm-hmm.
Working ahead in the kitchen.
Especially in summer when you don't really want to turn on the heat.
Yeah.
One thing I've been doing is cooking up grains. Like, I don't know, I was cleaning my pantry and I saw that I had a lot of quinoa and wheat berries that had been around and I didn't want them to get moths or anything. So I just cooked them all. And then I froze them in plastic bags, flattened them down, in portions or in, you know, 2 or 3 cup portions. And every once in a while, I'll just pull out the grain, thaw it in the microwave, and make a salad or a side dish. It's a great thing to do. Grains freeze very well.
Yeah. Tell us about how we can prep and cook, for example, spinach in batches to use in a number of dishes over the course of let's say, a week.
Well, greens also, if you've got a great big couple of bunches of spinach, that the time-consuming part of that is the stemming and the washing, and you really do have to usually give it a couple of rinses to get the dirt off. So with spinach, it's so delicate that once you've washed it, just put it in a big pan in batches, turn on the heat high, and let it wilt in the liquid still left on the leaves. Then just quickly rinse it with cold water to stop the cooking and take up handfuls, squeeze out all the water, and if you're going to use it that week, it'll keep for about 4 days in the refrigerator, just in a covered bowl. I always opt to, if I'm keeping things in the refrigerator, I find they keep better in a bowl covered with plastic than in a plastic bag. I think it just has to do with the circulation of air or something. If I'm cooking ahead a sturdier green like kale or even chard, I find it easier to blanch that. It cooks more evenly, so while I'm stripping the leaves from the stems and cleaning them, I'll have a big pot of water on the stove coming to a boil. And then I'll salt that water and just quickly parboil the green. With chard, it will only take a minute or two to wilt the green. Kale may take more like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Then you do the same thing. You immediately put it into a bowl of cold water and then drain, squeeze out the water with your hands and keep in a bowl. You can chop it or wait to chop it for the recipe.
Yeah. So then you could incorporate that, let's say, in a bean salad or in an omelet or...
Absolutely. Whenever I buy beets, for example, I always buy them with the greens on, and then I look to see if the vendor has been cutting off the greens for other people, and I ask her for those greens too. Bring them home and stem them and cook them up right away so that they're ready.
Huh.
And they keep longer if you blanch them instead of letting them wilt in the refrigerator. Yeah.
I've never eaten beet greens. What are they?
Oh, they're fantastic.
What do they taste like?
They taste like any leafy green, really. They're a little, they taste kind of like chard.
Okay.
They don't have the cruciferous flavor that kale has. They taste really herbal and excellent. They'll bleed in, you know, whatever you're cooking them in, because they still have some of that red in them. They're terrific. Never let them cut those off. Because you're really buying two vegetables in one.
What a deal.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to talk about some things that we might do without turning the oven on, and maybe even avoid standing over the stove too much. And our website, WILL.illinois.edu, our website today features a photo of your tomato salad with Turkish tahini dressing.
Mm.
And I think this would be a marvelous thing to make with all the tomatoes that are available
now. Yeah, it's
now.
A great summer dish, and it'll be new to people who have never used tahini in a dressing, but in the Middle East they use it quite a bit. It's a robust, garlicky mixture of tahini and lemon juice and crushed garlic, and it's thinned out with a little water, and I think it has a little olive oil in it. I can't remember. You just slice up the tomatoes and drizzle that tahini over it. And tahini is so nutritious. You're really feeding yourself well.
Okay. I have the recipe here in front of me, so I'll run down what you've got here.
Okay.
1.5 pounds of tomatoes, or a mixture of red and green tomatoes, cored and sliced. You could probably use any tomatoes. There are wonderful cherry tomatoes, a variety of cherry tomatoes available right now. 4 tablespoons sesame tahini, 1/3 cup water, 2 tablespoons freshly squeezed lemon juice, 1 to 2 garlic cloves, salt to taste, 1/2 teaspoon cumin seeds, lightly toasted and ground, freshly ground pepper, 1 to 2 tablespoons chopped flat leaf parsley. And you just mix up the dressing and pour it on your tomatoes, and you note with this recipe that this is, if the tomatoes aren't good, if it's the middle of winter, you can put this on steamed vegetables.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great dressing to have in your repertoire.
Yeah. Back to the spinach, I'm thinking that would be good folded in with pasta. Perhaps you could incorporate some nice fresh tomatoes with that.
Yeah, I have a recipe. In fact, last week I did a spinach column on the website, on the New York Times website, and I did a pasta. I had actually been in we have a lot of Iranian markets here in L.A., and they cook a lot of spinach in Iranian cuisine, and so they sell these huge bags, like 2.5 pounds. So I bought one. It was such a good deal, and I just cooked it all up. With the baby spinach, you don't even have to stem it. You just quickly rinse it and then wilt it. And so I tossed the pasta with a quick tomato sauce and the spinach and some goat cheese. It was really wonderful.
That sounds terrific. What about pestos? What can we do with pestos? We're probably familiar with basil, but you could also use spinach. What other things can we use?
Yeah, I make pestos, the classic pesto is a basil pesto, but you can use the same idea to make. There's a wonderful sauce from Morocco called chermoula, which is it's ground cilantro and parsley and garlic, and it's a great sauce. They use it with fish, but it's great with vegetables as well. In the Eastern Mediterranean, in the Republic of Georgia, they make a cilantro sauce that's thickened with walnuts. It's a pesto, really. It's just wonderful. You can even make pesto with parsley, and it's terrific with just garlic and nuts, pine nuts or walnuts to thicken, and parsley and olive oil.
Yeah. I know you're not a chemist, but what is it about parsley that makes it so refreshing?
You know, I'm not a chemist, but it must be the kind of bitter edge to it, and it must be just loaded with nutrients and phytochemicals, I'm sure.
Yeah. Also, cucumbers are so refreshing.
And they actually are refreshing because they have such a high water content, and I think that's really one of the – they're hydrating.
Yeah. They feel good, they smell good, they taste good.
Yeah, and they have something in them called silica, which is supposed to be really good for your skin, and that's why they use it in so many skin creams for as a tissue. It's good for tissue.
Yeah. And a couple of slices do really feel good over the eyes.
Yeah.
This is Focus. My name is Celeste Quinn. Our guest today, Martha Rose Schulman. She writes a column online for the New York Times. It is called Recipes for Health, and you'll find it at nyt.com. She is also the author of more than 25 cookbooks. Her latest comes to bookstores at the end of this month. The title, The Very Best of Recipes for Health, 250 recipes from the popular feature on nyt.com. Listeners, join us this morning with questions, comments. What are you cooking? 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. Let's go back to the pantry. What do you recommend we have on hand?
Well, I think that you should have a couple of grains, rice, maybe quinoa or bulgur, whatever you like. You should have some canned tomatoes, so you can always just whip up a pasta. Some beans, if you quick cooking beans like lentils are really great to have on hand because you don't have to really think about it. You can just come home, and they only take about 40 minutes to cook. Another dried bean that cooks quickly is black-eyed peas. They don't require soaking. And then canned beans are fine in my book, and so I always have chickpeas and white beans in cans. You should have, and I think of the refrigerator as an extension of your pantry. There are certain things that you should not be without in your refrigerator. You should have a vegetable or two that keep well. Something like broccoli or green beans is going to keep for 4 or 5 days fine in your refrigerator. Carrots, red peppers are another good keeper. I always have eggs on hand and yogurt, and I always have some Parmesan cheese and maybe either feta or goat cheese in my refrigerator. Olive oil and a good vinegar on your in your pantry, vital for all cooking and salad making. Pasta, dried pasta, another important thing. I have on my website, which is martha-rose-schulman.com, I actually have a pantry checklist that you can download and put up on your refrigerator.
You're very busy.
I'm very busy. Very busy.
We'll talk a little bit about pasta and maybe pasta and beans and cheese and tomatoes and some herb, maybe putting that together for a refreshing summer main dish salad.
Yeah, or just an easy main dish that has some protein. You could, without even cooking beyond putting the water on for the pasta, chop up some fresh tomatoes, toss them with garlic and salt to taste, and some olive oil, and some basil if you have some. Open a can of chickpeas, drain it, rinse the chickpeas. When your water comes to a boil, cook the pasta, toss it with the tomatoes, chickpeas, some either Parmesan or feta or goat cheese, whatever you like, and you've got dinner. And you've got some protein there, and it's substantial. If you wanted to serve it cold, it would be fine. If you're going to serve it as a salad, I would undercook the pasta just a little bit, because it will get a little soggy if it sits for too long in the tomato sauce.
Yeah. Let's take a call from a listener in Danville, line one. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, I caught the tail end of you with your halibut recipe using the cucumber. I wondered if you could maybe kind of go over that again real quickly. And is there any one cookbook that you have specifically that you have a lot of fish recipes in? I get kind of tired of just breading it and frying it.
I'll answer your second question first. There are a fair amount of fish recipes in Mediterranean Light and also in a book I wrote called Provençal Light.
Okay.
So that's where you'll find the most of my, and also there are fairly a lot of recipes in my book Mexican Light as well. For the cucumber and halibut recipe, you could also use sand dabs or any light fish fillet. You would just slice up, take a like one long European cucumber, slice it up fairly thin. Your oven is pretty hot, like 425, and you'll oil a baking dish, put a layer of cucumbers with dill sprinkled over, season the cucumbers, then the fish in one layer, sprinkle the fish with dill and garlic and salt and pepper, then another layer of cucumbers, sprinkle some more dill over the top, and then add a few tablespoons of lemon juice and about a half a cup of white wine and cover it tightly and bake it for 10 or 15 minutes.
And great, I appreciate it.
And
the recipe's on the NewYorkTimes.com. You can find it.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And what's the temperature of the oven?
It's either 425 or 450.
Okay. And speaking of fish, this fellow is interested in fish recipes, and here we are in the summer. Poached salmon is nice.
You know, I have one way of cooking my salmon that I find a lot easier than poaching.
Yeah?
This is like this incredible fail-safe method, and you get the most moist fish. It's called oven steaming. You put your oven on at 300, and you put a pan of very hot water on the floor of your oven, and you take a big fillet of salmon, put it on, line a baking sheet with foil and oil the foil, and put it skin side down on that baking sheet. Season the salmon, put it in the oven for 20 minutes, and you get this incredibly moist salmon.
That sounds great.
And that recipe is both in my book, The Very Best of Recipes for Health, and also online.
Yeah, I'm going to try that. I have enjoyed poached salmon, and I think it works pretty well, especially with the Alaskan wild salmon, because it keeps it moist.
Exactly.
And then we serve it with some chopped cucumber.
Exactly. It's great with cucumber.
And
one of those cucumbers.
Yeah, tomato and maybe a little celery. Capers are nice in there.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that's really a lovely dish, and it's so pretty.
Yes.
Yeah, and so is your halibut and cucumbers. There's a photo of it online. So how long have you been doing the column now?
It's been 2 years. I'm into my third year now.
Wow. Because
I'm about to write my third annual tomato recipe.
It's amazing to see what is there. There is such a wealth of recipes. I'm just blown away by all the different foods. I know that I printed out, here it is. I printed this out because I wanted to talk about it, but on the fitness and nutrition page online, recipes for health, you go from apricots to yogurt. And I don't know how many different items there are here. Apricots, artichokes, asparagus, avocado, beans, beets, black beans, blueberries, broccoli. Well, you get the idea.
They've done a really nice job indexing the recipes.
And the photos are beautiful.
Yes, they really are nice. Those are the photograph. Photographer Andrew Scrivani is just doing a great job.
Yeah. So he does that. Does he do that every day?
Yeah, he's actually based in New York, and but he's out here this week because we're going to add videos to the website.
How
we're
wonderful!
Making some videos this week.
How wonderful!
Yeah.
So okay, well, what is out of all these recipes now that you've done over almost 3 years now? How did you pick 250 for the forthcoming
book?
It
was hard, but I just went through and I really chose, I wanted to choose ones that were going to be most, you know, to eat, to make. And, you know, hopefully it'll be an annual event, this book. I'll just have to keep adding recipes and making a series.
Yeah. It's so daily. Is it ever a challenge?
You know, there are some weeks where I'll wake up and I write them as a group because they're thematic. So I will say, what am I going to do this week? And sometimes, you know, I like to kind of know and have them all tested by Tuesday, and so that I can get them to the photographer. But sometimes, you know, I'm walking around, going to the store, trying to get inspired. But something always comes to me.
Yeah. Well, keep up the good work.
Thanks.
This is Focus, the first hour of Focus, and our guest this morning has been Martha Rose Shulman. We're so pleased to have had her as our guest this morning. She writes a daily online column for the New York Times. The objective of this column is to provide readers with exciting, nutritious dishes that are fun to cook and a pleasure to eat. In addition to the column for the Times, she's the acclaimed author of more than 25 cookbooks. Mediterranean Harvest, just out this summer in paperback. At the end of this month, a collection of favorites from her column will be in bookstores. The title, The Very Best of Recipes for Health, 250 recipes from the popular feature on NYT.com. In addition to her online at the New York Times, you'll find her online at Martha-Rose-Shulman, S-H-U-L-M-A-N. My name is Celeste Quinn. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Coming up in the next hour of the program, David Inge will be in the host's seat, and he will be talking about health care and the elderly. It's 10:58 coming up. A market update and news from NPR.